Hello and welcome to another episode of Earth 911's Sustainability in Your Ear, the podcast conversation with a changemaker working to accelerate the transition to a sustainable carbon neutral society. I'm your host, Mitch Ratcliffe. You know, just a few decades ago, satellite imagery was available only to a few governments on the planet. But as of September 2021, 7,941 mostly privately operated satellites were in orbit around the Earth, and thousands are being launched each year. We're familiar with the Hubble and James Webb Space Telescopes that are exploring the universe, but most of these satellites are pointed back at the planet to send signals or pictures and other data to people and companies. Just as computing has accelerated scientific discoveries about how our world works, the flood of information from satellites will increase our understanding of the planet, its environment, and ecosystems. Our guest today is Thomas Van Matter, Vice President of Global Business Development at Satellogic, a geospatial analytics company that has launched 26 low Earth orbiting satellites to date and will expand to more than 200 satellites by 2025 in order to, as they describe it, democratize access to high-resolution images and analytics. We'll find out more about what that means for companies and individuals. Satellogic developed microsatellites that are less than 2 feet wide and just under 3 feet tall to reduce the cost of building and launching them. Today, the majority of satellites are small and purpose-built for specific uses. Satellogic offers climate data and imagery that can be used to analyze climate change as it happens, monitor land use, invasive species, identify illegal activities, as well as track wildfires, extreme weather, and other climate-related threats. Because Satellogic can refresh images on a location up to 5 times a day, its imaging can track events in real time. You can find out more about Satellogic at satellogic.com. Satellogic is spelled with two L's, satellogic.com. Welcome to the show, Thomas. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Thank you.
You're in Zurich. Thanks for calling in early. Well, actually, it's early in the morning where I am, later in the day where you are. You have a global business. It's interesting that you're running all over the planet to conduct it. What are you doing in Zurich?
Yeah. So, you know, meeting clients, you know, our business is focused on both the enterprise side and also on the government side. So we serve both client bases. So yep, here in Zurich, meeting the usual suspects, as they say.
Well, what kind of information does a company or a government working to both understand climate change and try to address it get from Satellogic?
Well, I'd say that, you know, with the latest conversations we've been having, not necessarily around climate change, but more along the lines of like asset management around the world, a company like Satellogic, with as many assets that we have on orbit, we're able to do global scale asset monitoring. So whether that's real estate or properties or insurance or agriculture, if you've got assets on a global scale, we're able to serve that client base.
So you can capture still images up to a minute of live video and several times a day. And you have multispectral and hyperspectral imaging. What does that allow you to spot? For instance, can you see a methane emission from a rogue petrochemical facility or melting peat moss in the Arctic on the images?
Right. So, not to get too technical, but sure. within our spectral range on our hyperspectral sensor, our hyperspectral sensor, we're able to detect various different vegetative indices. Mm-hmm. So crop health, vegetative stress. We're able to do some biomass analysis. We're able to understand some of the moisture content in the soil and things of that nature.
I also read about the fact that you can assess the capacity of a solar park installation, which I found fascinating because normally I would think the productivity of the system would be dependent on the type of device, the type of panel. Is the resolution so good with your satellite that you can identify what types of panel is in use in order to do that assessment?
That's correct. Yeah. So we're sub-meter resolution. So anything below a meter or 70 centimeters, if there's two objects apart from each other that are 70 centimeters apart, we can distinguish that difference.
So you literally can look at and inventory a solar park and then come up with a projected amount of energy that it would produce on a daily basis. That's amazing.
Yeah, correct. And so yeah, there has to be some other knowns that go along with that. But yes, from the imagery side and from the analysis of the imagery, that's correct.
Well, this idea of data as a service, which is the way that you present what you offer, is really interesting. And a lot more companies are thinking about how to use data to do forward-looking planning, something we have not been particularly good at as a species so far. What are some of the surprising problems that you can address using your satellite systems?
Oh, that's a good question. Some of the surprising things. I think, I think we're just starting to scratch the surface on what hyperspectral data can do. It's relatively a new and unique and novel capability. It's been around for a while, but in terms of, I like to say, it's incumbent upon the industry to make the scientific scalable and to make the abstract more knowable, right? More approachable. Mm-hmm. So I think with hyperspectral data, what we're going to see in the next several years are people to really be able to derive some deep insights about what's going on around the Earth. So you brought up methane detection earlier. I would say that, hyperspectral will have a role to play in methane detection. It'll also have a role to play in various forms of biomass identification. But also on large scale infrastructure, like there are some parts in the electromagnetic spectrum where you can identify oxidation. So rust, for example. So you can determine, whether or not the infrastructure is rusted out.
Wow.
And needs to be replaced in remote areas or if it's healthy. So and the other thing that the pandemic brought to light was supply chain. So being able to analyze entire supply chains on a global scale. I wouldn't say it was a new application, but it was certainly an application that was brought to light.
So essentially, the satellite can replace the need to send people out to manage or track that infrastructure or something else. Like, we don't need somebody in a fire tower anymore. They can get that information from a satellite five times a day.
That's right. That's right. And that's really where the unit economics come in. So when you can produce satellites at scale and you can sell satellite image, pass on those cost savings to the consumer, it no longer makes sense to put someone in harm's way out in remote areas where it's dangerous to do so, or where it's economically viable to explore alternative solutions.
Well, and that brings me to the question about how do you democratize what your site describes as the next information utility, satellite imagery. Mm-hmm. Who is the target audience? You mentioned governments and companies, but is it possible that, for instance, a farmer could get a daily view of their fields to assess how much water they're using?
I think that's the trajectory for the industry. I think we will be moving from a B2B model or a B2G model to a B2C model, where consumers will be able to not necessarily know exactly what they're seeing in the image or why it's important, sure, but the ecosystem will be able to provide that, where imagery providers will partner with other folks in their ecosystem to provide those analytics on top of the imagery so that the layperson can make sense of what they're seeing.
And what's the time frame for that kind of trajectory? Are we talking about something that will be a commonplace in 10 or 15 years?
I believe so. I believe so. I believe that's the trajectory of the market. And I think it's incumbent upon, our industry to make that happen, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, I was at a climate tech meetup last night talking to somebody who is working with satellite imagery and wants to try to address a whole range of problems. It's interesting. We're following the same trajectory that the computing industry did. You build the core capability and then you layer in different forms of analytics and interpretation on the data that the platform produces. How does Satellogic engage with the developer or the analytics market in order to help them articulate the information you're collecting in various valuable ways?
Yeah, I like that question. Because we, Satellogic, our philosophy, you know, we really stick to it, is that idea of democratizing data. And you can't democratize data and get it in the hands of the many by having restrictive licensing models. And so what we've done is we've kind of taken that restrictive licensing model away. And so we encourage the ecosystem to grow. And I think that's how you create a larger TAM, right? Your addressable market is by relaxing some of those licensing restrictions so that you can get data in the hands of those that can produce those analytics on top. And then further, you know, when they develop either algorithms or derivatives or value-added services, that they can then disseminate those or distribute those to the masses.
So when you get an image from Satellogic, obviously there's a picture, but there must be a great deal of other data from the multispectral perspective that's embedded in the image for analysis.
Yeah, and it depends on the processing level, right? So there's various types of metadata that come along, you know, with the data, and a lot of our value-added service providers, you know, can run their algorithms on the imagery, you know, using the data stack, but then also, you know, create value-added services on top of the images themselves.
We're going to talk a little more about the end of life of satellites later, but right now it occurs to me that in the 12 years since Satellogic was founded, that the type of imagery and data that can be captured has changed pretty radically. Is this a bigger business than the founders anticipated? And how much has the technology changed around your satellites or within your satellites over the course of the last 12 years?
Yeah, so I think, the founders set up the company to precisely do exactly what we're trying to do right now, right? Okay. Democratize access to satellite data. I think in doing so, what we found is, you know, being able to quickly and efficiently build low-cost satellites, it inherently reduces our R&D cycles. Because we're producing so many satellites, we're able to adopt and implement new technology about every 9 months. Or when you look back in time, you'll see that with every launch, we're either testing or implementing something new with our satellites. So I would say it is a constant evolution or a constant upgrade in technology.
This is fascinating. I want to take a quick commercial break and we're going to be right back to continue the conversation. We're back to continue the discussion with Thomas Van Matter of Satellogic, a geospatial analytics company that will have more than 200 satellites in low Earth orbit by 2025. Now, you have a software platform, the Aleph platform, where you can go in and select images and download the information. What's it cost to get started and what's involved in using that? Do you create a library of images and data that you tap into on an ongoing basis, or you just download and then go do the information, do what you will with the information?
Sure. Yeah. So Aleph will be launching this year, later this year. It'll be another platform where users can come in, and at our particular price points, we believe this will be the B2C type model where you log in, the pricing is transparent, you find a place on the earth that you want to download or stream, you select that, and then you can pull that data down. You can also, another interesting part is you can also place tasking orders through the platform. So you can actually task our satellites, task the constellation to take images for you.
What's the lead time on that kind of thing? Can I get that same day, or does it require some positioning or other kinds of management that takes a couple of days to do?
Yeah, it's all dependent on what the, you know, what the user needs. So if the user needs just a minimally produced quick turnaround image, that could be an intraday delivery. If it's produced, you know, what in industry speak at a level one, level two, or level three, the processing times are longer, just depending on the level of production needed.
So, and what does it cost? I mean, is this an expensive undertaking for an organization at this point? And I guess the question is, what's expensive?
Right. Well, I mean, our price points are going to be the most affordable in the market. That is for sure. I would say, you know, legacy prices ranged between, $70 a square kilometer mm-hmm. down to $30 a square kilometer. And we're going to be an order of magnitude cheaper than that.
Okay. Wow. So really almost anybody would be able to get that picture or that data set for a very affordable price. Now, one of the things your site talks about is that you're working to enable communities, particularly underserved communities, to afford tracking. Are you mm-hmm. setting up programs or collaborating with governments or philanthropic organizations in order to make available this kind of information so that a community in the Amazon could identify illegal logging nearby or even within the United States, track zoning violations?
Yeah, absolutely. We are partnering with NGOs around the world to solve problems precisely like the ones you mentioned. In addition, you may have read about our agreement with the Albanian government. One of the things that the Albanian government was suffering from was the inability to collect taxes on illegal construction, right? And those tax dollars then couldn't be fed into building up the country's infrastructure. So one of the main drivers behind Albania's, signing up for our Constellation as a service was to do precisely that, to identify places of illegal construction or illegal construction activity at scale for the benefit of the government.
Now, the other thing I want to talk about is a whole set of questions around the environmental impact of satellites. And the first is, we have a lot of satellites orbiting now that are not even in use anymore, a lot of space junk. As you're planning a launch, do you factor in end-of-life practices to reduce the amount of stuff in orbit? And what happens to a satellite when you retire it?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of that is factored in. I would defer on, to our head of mission and operations mm-hmm. as to the technical specifics and how to deorbit a satellite. But it's my understanding, right, that once the satellites enter the end of life, is that they're deorbited in the safest way possible, and that they essentially incinerate upon deorbit.
And because of the size, that's a practical and relatively assured outcome. You can burn up a satellite intentionally just by putting it on the wrong trajectory into the atmosphere. So you're thinking that you don't leave it up there. It is
no. There is a dedicated deorbit plan.
Okay. Now the other thing is, when you launch a satellite, the fuel involved is one of the sources of CO2 emissions, or at least could be. What are the environmental impacts of launching a satellite or manufacturing a satellite? Obviously, there's rare earths and various things involved in the technology, but what's the footprint of one of these things?
That's a good question. I would have to defer to the folks within the company that know the answer to that. I don't have that answer for you.
Okay. Has the company set its own zero emissions goals? Are you working towards a net zero target date? And how are you doing?
Absolutely. In fact, our CEO will be at COP27 in November and make that announcement.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Now, we'll obviously be interested to follow that. Are there clean fuel technologies or other technologies that will reduce the environmental impact of satellites? Are you aware of conversations about that? I mean, it must come up in sales conversations, for instance.
To be honest, it hasn't to date.
Really?
Yeah, not with any customers that we've had that I'm privy to. I really can't speak to that. We honestly have not fielded a question around that yet.
Does the company make an effort to raise the issue with potential clients as a benefit? The fact that you are thinking proactively about preventing the growth of space junk, for instance, is that at all part of the messaging that you're doing as a company?
Well, I can't say much because it's not public, but our CEO will make that announcement at COP27 about our emissions targets and our plan for net zero.
Now, turning back to the kind of growth of this industry that we've been talking about, I read that the company had started off and thought it would never really need more than 20 employees, and yet now has more than 400 working all over the world. is the satellite and Earth orbiting data business going to lead to an explosion in employment and around interpreting and using satellite generated data, the way that we've seen computing explode into society and touching every aspect of it? When we understand the planet to the extent that you guys can enable, how does this change and what kinds of jobs emerge out of that?
Yeah, I think we really have seen, you know, an explosion, particularly in the geospatial information science, so the GIS realm and in earth sciences. I think when you look at a lot of the aerospace hubs, you're seeing them become geospatial and aerospace hubs, like the Front Range in Colorado, the Toulouse Aerospace Valley, Adelaide in Australia. You're seeing this entire ecosystem start to spring up. And it's not just the downstream applications where people are, you know, coming up with new and novel algorithms everything from data management, data collection, space operations management, but upstream as well. So the supply chain is growing. As the industry grows, the supply chain goes. And I think there's just been truly an explosion of startups and companies and incubators around the planet, both in the upstream and the downstream.
So a lot of what I'm hearing, it's reminiscent of the open source software movement. You have created something that you can't do everything with. I mean, it's full of potential. And by making the information more widely available, democratizing it, mm-hmm. we potentially could rediscover our planet. What kinds of jobs would you recommend somebody, a young person listening to the show, think about pursuing if they want to take advantage of what that represents as an opportunity?
I think there's, you know, for the foreseeable future, there's not going to be a surplus of data scientists. So I think data scientists are going to be in high demand. And then particularly with, you know, finding your niche within data science. So is that earth data science? Is that atmosphere data science? Is that, geological data science? I think a lot of those, you know, those different disciplines are going to be in high demand, particularly as, you know, ESG strategies and CSR strategies are becoming, you know, par for the course with the Fortune 500, with government mandates mm-hmm. through all of the COP initiatives and the UN initiatives, where climate is going to be front and center for the foreseeable future. So in a lot of the information that is going to feed a lot of the decisions is going to be grounded in the data science, and particularly data science from Earth observation data.
Thomas, I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us today. How can folks follow along with what Satellogic is up to?
Yeah, so you know, you can go to satellogic.com. You can go there. You can go to info@satellogic.com to contact our team. Mm-hmm. I would also recommend following us on LinkedIn, where a lot of our updates are posted.
Well, thanks very much. You have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Mitch. Appreciate it.
We've been speaking with Thomas Van Matter, Vice President of Global Business Development at Satellogic. And you can learn more about Satellogic at www.satellogic.com. And Satellogic is spelled with two L's, by the way. You know, like computing, satellite imagery and data is transforming how and when we interact with the environment. Just being able to observe the planet conveniently allows humans to respond more quickly to emergencies. But it's the ongoing data collection that changes fundamentally how we prepare for and manage our response to climate change. And it's going to be a remarkable industry to work in. Like computing, it's going to creep into every facet of our lives. And it's also encouraging to hear that Satellogic is planning about its approach to retiring satellites rather than just leaving them in orbit with the more than 27,000 pieces of human-made debris, the space junk left from the first two generations of space exploration. Maybe, just maybe, we can do a better job going forward, but it's going to be incumbent on the space industry to continually improve its environmental impact, which means that we will need innovations in fuels and launch technology, and perhaps even a way to capture and recycle the components of satellites rather than letting those rare earths and other valuable materials burn up in the atmosphere. We'll continue to track the story at Earth 911. I'd deeply appreciate it if you would take a few minutes to share this show with your friends, family, neighbors, your coworkers. You're the amplifier that spreads ideas that will lead to a more environmentally responsible future. So please let folks know that they can find sustainability in your ear on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Audible, and other fine purveyors of podcast goodness. I really will appreciate your support. Thank you. I'm Mitch Ratcliffe. We'll be back with another innovator interview soon. In the meantime, folks, take care of yourself, take care of one another, and let's all take care of this beautiful planet of ours. Have a green day.